Hello and welcome. My name is Gino Barbaro, one of the co-founders of Jake and Gino. And on today's show, we're going to be talking about branding, storytelling, and communication. Stacy Havener is the founder and CEO of Havener Capital, an agency dedicated to helping asset managers build, launch, and grow funds. She has raised $8 billion. That's a B, leading to an additional $30 billion in follow-on assets under management. And I think her tagline is the blue-collar girl from the Berkshires. Welcome to the show, Stacy. How you doing?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure to be with you. I love your energy. I'm ready for this.
I don't know if the listener is going to be ready for this because we're gonna overwhelm them a little bit. So, you know, as you're listening to the podcast, I rarely say this, but I have a pen and a piece of paper here because for me, what we're going to be discussing really is how to raise money, but how to raise it, I don't want to say ethically, but having a little bit of fun. And this may be different than what most people perceive it to be. It's not just cap rate. It's not just IRR. It's not just what the deal is going to do, but what you are as a person and what your story is. So, you know, Stacy, give us a little bit of a background before I jump in, because I'm being Jake likes to jump in and snowplow. I want to learn a little bit about your story.
I love it. And I love everything you said. Thank you so much for having me on, Gino. And I really hope that your listeners walk away, as you said, with something actionable. I'm a big fan of like, yes, let's be inspired. Let's learn, but also let's take action after. So I love the notebook and the pen. You hit on it. I mean, I think I'll share a little of my story in case it inspires people to get more comfortable to tell theirs. Knowing that, by the way, this is a journey. Okay, authenticity is a journey and it's not going to feel comfortable. And that's just part of it. So everything you said is right. I am a founder of a sales and marketing agency. I have raised over $8 billion. That's led to $30 billion for startups and investment boutiques, which if you're in this business, you know that if you're BlackRock, raising $1 billion is like, you know, you did it in the first 5 minutes before lunch. But for the rest of us who are building, those numbers are really big and really difficult to get to. But the part I want to dive into today with you and your listeners is that on paper, none of that makes any sense. Okay. Mm-hmm. I am a blue collar kid. I'm from a working class town. I got the wrong degree from the wrong school and I'm a woman. I never saw myself in the investment world. I actually wanted to be a college professor in literature. I was a writer. I was a poet. I was a storyteller. I wanted to be a teacher. But I paid my way through university, and I was going to pay my way through grad school because I was going to have to get a PhD. I had stayed local for college. My high school soccer coach, we stayed in touch, and his day job was that he ran a $1 billion small cap equity boutique. I didn't even know coaches had day jobs, so this was news to me. But he was launching a fund, and he offered me a job. It was kind of like, come work with me, help me launch this fund, save some money, and then you can go back to grad school and pursue your dreams. Obviously, I never left the industry. I helped him launch the fund. Mm-hmm. We raised $500 million in 2 years. Then I raised $3 billion in 3 years for a $17 million fund, and so on and so forth. And it turns out that in this world full of men who love numbers, there was a place for a girl who loved words. And it was fun for me. And to be honest with you, I didn't know I was doing anything special. I think it took me a few years to realize, like people tapping me on the shoulder going, just so you know, like what you're doing is not supposed to work. Like funds with no track record don't raise money. What are you doing that is creating this success? It probably took me 10 years to really unpack all of that. But at the heart of it is what you said, storytelling. Mm-hmm. I was helping people connect with each other at a human level. Because at the end of the day, people do business with people, even here in the investment world. And so today I'm lucky to lead the team at Havener, where we help investment boutiques grow using our narrative-led sales and marketing system. And I truly believe everyone has a story, and we're on a mission to help boutiques use that story to shape their success.
Stacey, you had said that, you know, if you don't have a track record, you can't raise capital. The problem is most of these people had track records and they had relationships. So maybe they didn't need to focus on that as much, because if John knows Bill, they can hook up and they're doing business already. But for somebody starting out or somebody wanting to expand and to velocitize it, I think what you said is so true about story. When you're working with somebody and they want to start raising capital, what's the one of the first couple of things that you want to focus on?
Yeah. So we do the story and that will weave itself in. That's like the very first thing we do. And just so you know, when we do that, it's typically one-on-one. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't have a room full of people to kind of talk through story, because what we really want to tap into is the founder's story. So usually boutiques are founder led, and that's part of the magic. That's part of the brand, which I know we want to talk about. And so we do it one-on-one. So just know that's the first thing we do. But I think your point is a really, really important one, which is great. Let's just say I've got all my stories done. I've done the work, but who do I talk to? Who am I telling these stories to? So I think a couple things happen that we want to try to avoid if we can. The first kind of story we tell ourselves is that the best way to raise money is go to the biggest investor I know or have worked with and call them and try to get a small amount of money. So let's say, you know, some university endowment, some big institution had money with me at my prior gig. Now I've started my own firm. What if I call them and just get a tiny little bit of it? The problem is that investors, just like people, are on a curve. Some investors are early adopters and some investors are late majority adopters, which means some people are comfortable being first into something and they invest for very different reasons, and other people want to invest in what everybody else is already investing in. And it's not good or bad, it's just important to know, because if you are starting out with a new fund or a new firm, you can't skip the early adopters. And the way you sell to them is different, because what's important to them is different. So what we say is, if you want to find those early adopters, typically the place to look is at your own network, your founder's network, mm-hmm. people that you've worked with, that you've worked with at a previous firm, new in the industry, just know from town, know from school, you know, your founder's network. Start with them. Kind of get all those names on a piece of paper, because they're probably all in your head. So kind of get all that information out. Reach out to them on LinkedIn or text or however you communicate with these people. And just set up a coffee or a drink or lunch or whatever, something very low pressure, and catch up. Tell them what you're doing and ask for advice. Here's what I'm doing. Ask for advice. Because when you ask for advice, you often get money. And when you ask for money, you often get advice.
I like that.
So it just, and it takes the pressure off. I think sometimes we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to close a deal in the first meet, you know, make that first meeting, you know, turn into a deal, or, you know, find that first investor like yesterday. And so you have all this pressure. And what happens is when you get in a meeting with someone, they feel it. They feel it. They feel like you're selling or pitching, or, and that doesn't feel good to them. So if you try to come from a place of like, hey, I'm starting something, you're successful, I've known you forever, whatever the backstory is, I would just love to get your feedback and advice, or tell me your story. Like, those meetings can be really magical, and there's no point other than getting to know each other and catching up. And it seems so simple, and you're like, that can't be, but it is.
And I can attest to that, because if you're there and you have an opportunity and you're excited, you still have to understand the other person's side, where they're coming from, what their goals as investors are. Just because I've got a great deal, Stacey may not be a great fit. She may not want a 1985 Knoxville deal that's 82 units that we're looking at right now. That may not be in her wheelhouse. She may be more excited about cryptocurrency. So you pitching a deal to somebody that has no interest, at the very least, you can say, hey, Stacey, at the end of the meeting, listen, I know this isn't for you, but do you know anybody who would love this opportunity? That's it. That's
exactly.
What
I think. And that's what the network effect is. The network effect isn't just powerful because we're friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's powerful because we're friends. And even if it's not for you, you have friends who might be interested in what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And so that is exactly why you start with the people who know you best. And also because in the beginning, you know, the investors come into something, especially early adopters, because of you.
Mm-hmm.
As much, if not more, than because of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's that whole, are you betting the jockey? Are you betting the horse? Well, like, this is a people business. And so we try, I think, to leave the people part out. Like, we sort of sell to someone's brain, like, this is a great deal. Here are the numbers. Think about it. When actually decision-making starts in the heart, mm-hmm. the brain's job is to rationalize the decision and make sure it's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Sell with emotion, close with logic. I think someone said that. I'm not sure who said that, but it's important. And, you know, what I'd like to ask is, I'm listening to this right now, and I don't really know what my origin story is, or how do I pull it out? I don't really think it's important. How do you pull out an origin story from somebody?
Yes, it's a great question. And it's difficult to do kind of to yourself, right? Because you're so close to it that it's sometimes hard to see. It's almost easier for someone who doesn't know you as well to pull it together quickly, because they're going to listen to you talk and they're going to pull the threads. Like, you said this way back when in the story, and then you said this, and those things to me seem related. Are they? And you go, oh my God, yeah, they're totally related. How did I not see that? Mm-hmm. So the way you get to the origin story, though, if you just want to sit and reflect and journal and think about it, it usually has something to do with a challenge or difficulty or messy part of your backstory that you probably don't want to think about or talk about that much.
Mm-hmm.
Usually when you go to that thing, you'll find something. So I'm going to pretend I'm talking to a multifamily investor. And in fact, I can use someone I know who is this. And he's in my strategic coach group with me. And he grew up in a housing complex, a low-income housing complex. And this is a really straight line, by the way. You're going to be like, oh, and now he invests in multifamily housing complex? Yes. However, he has a whole unique way that he repurposes and regentrifies these communities that is very, very personal to him because he lived in them.
Mm-hmm.
And does he tell the story of the fact that he lived in them? No. And when I met him, I was like, my goodness, that story will move someone to write a check because you've lived it, you've overcome it, and now you're giving back and you're taking people with you on that journey. That gives me goosebumps. Like, that is a why. Mm-hmm. So that's a pretty direct line, but usually there's something there. There's some thread that of something that impacted you, someone that impacted you, a mentor perhaps, like that's another great way to unlock some stories that you knowingly or probably unknowingly have pulled forward into what you're passionate about now.
Mm-hmm. As I'm sitting here and thinking about it, I think I shared with you before we started recording my origin story from Jake and Gino, why I started the education company. And if you don't mind, I just want to share.
Yeah, I want to hear it. I would love to.
And what this mentor actually did on one of our recordings, he said, go back to your childhood between the ages of 9 and 13 and think of a specific story. And I'm like everybody else, I don't know any stories. And he says, just calm down and think about it. Something will pop up. And then I sat there and I'm like, okay, I'm literally 9 years old. I'm going to work with my father at the restaurant, his restaurant. I remember walking in the restaurant. There's bread on the floor. We take the bread. We bring it into the kitchen. And my dad is in the kitchen there cleaning the chicken cutlets with me. He's teaching me how to cook. And as the day progresses, I really enjoy working with him. But I think at the same point, I enjoy how good he is at something and how people respect him and how much he likes what he's doing and how much he's impacting people. And as that goes on, I'm thinking, wow, that is really cool. In 2007, when he passed away from the restaurant, because I had started a restaurant with him and the family, he passes away. And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking to myself, was that his dream or was that my dream to own the restaurant? And I don't know for sure, but I know that I loved working with him and I loved what he represented. And we started Jake and Gino in 2016 because we wanted to monetize the education, which for me was great, but I was already doing fine with the real estate. And I found how amazing the education was, how much we learned, how I've been able to been on shows with you and learn stuff from other people. But it ended up coming down to, I think what the education really means to me is that I can be a mentor to others, like my dad was with me. And I think subconsciously I am continuing his legacy of that, of having people say, hey, Gino, you're doing a great job. You've helped me out. You've impacted me. So to be able to share that with people and to say, hey, I'm doing this just because I want to teach people to become financially free, that's the pitch line. But to be able to share that with people and say, I'm really doing this, I think, because I'm continuing his legacy and I want to be like my dad. And oh, by the way, I want to show my mom that I'm actually really good at something. I think people can relate to that. And you know what I'm saying? Like if you put all those dots together.
I absolutely do. And I loved it. So, I mean, what a great story. Thank you for sharing it. Let's show people a little bit, if we can, how that came together. So one of the things that was great is that you went to something very specific. Mm-hmm. And that helped, like you had details, the bread on the floor, being next to him, watching him work, watching other people kind of respond to him. And also I loved what you said, which was, you know, we did start a restaurant together, so I didn't know that part of your story. And I'm not sure whose dream that was. Wow. How many of us can relate to that? And not like it's a bad thing, but what it says is being with him in that mentorship that you had and partnership and learning together and building something together was more important than. And so it makes total sense why you would want to give back in that way and to be a mentor for other people because of how much it has empowered you. The last part about your mom, showing her that you could be doing, you know, good at something. What that is to me is like, that's a separation and creating something special that's yours. Mm-hmm. And that all of those little stories you shared with us, what they do is they create connection because it's a shared experience. All of us can relate to that, either because we've had something similar or something very different, but that ability to sort of open up and let people in creates that connection. That it was masterful that you did that. The monetizing thing, I mean, do you even have to say it?
No,
of course.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, of course, it's a business. Like,
yes. And it's one of those things, Stacey, I'm sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, no, please do it.
I've only told the story a couple of times. So part of storytelling is you really need to refine the story and practice it. So I just threw the part in with my mom at the very end because I felt as
if I love that.
I'm still working it in because I'm like, you know what? My mom was always like, we have to stay small. We can't grow. We can't take risks. And I had one restaurant for 20 something years and 1800 apartment units in less than 5 or 6 years. So thinking about that and making my mom proud of me, I think that's what we all want. We ultimately want our parents to be proud of us. So as I'm telling you the story, I'm working through different iterations as well. And I've only told it, you know, two times, maybe three. This is the third time. So I still need to work on the story and I still need to refine it. So
great point. And I think that's, So you did a great job. You added something new to the story that gave more connection. And that's how storytelling works. It's never the same same every time, it doesn't hit hit because
it's not authentic, right?
Like a pitch. Yeah. And the piece about your mom, I would keep exploring that because a backstory is great because it gives you context of how the person got where they are. The part that you added in about your mom pulls the backstory into where you're going, right? Because it was like, the restaurant biz, mm-hmm. turning point, and now here I am in this multifamily piece. But you kept that story thread going through. So that's really great. I would definitely keep working on that one because it gives people the back and it also takes them forward.
And this is difficult for people because there's work involved.
Very.
I have a life coach friend of mine, and his name is Phil McKernan, and his famous three words, we did a couples coaching retreat last year in Ireland, and we worked on our childhood, then you work mm-hmm. on your present, then you work on your future self. It's sit with it. Sometimes we don't want to sit with our emotions, and I don't want to like generalize men, women, but men, for the most part, we like to shove those emotions down. It's okay if you're angry. It's okay to have those emotions. It's okay to let them sit there and marinate. And like I said, that emotion of my mom just popped out of my mind right now after thinking about this story for like a month or so.
Yes.
So it's okay to sit with that emotion and let it work. And it's hard work. I promise you it's hard work, but it's even harder if you don't do the work. So that's one thing I'll 100%. Say to everybody.
100%. 100%. And it's a fabulous point because a lot of people, myself included, and I worked through this in my own like therapy sessions that, you know, I was constantly busy. And my therapist said to me,
why?
What would happen if you stopped moving around mm-hmm. and doing things? What would happen if you just sat still? And that's because you don't want to confront some of those things. So it's yes. a fabulous point. I also think what's tough is not just like, you know, confronting these stories and ourselves, is that then you've got this wackadoodle lady who comes on your podcast and tells you that you've got to tell that to somebody else, someone who you'd love to get an investment from. And you're like, oh, great, great, great advice. Like I can barely get through it myself. And now you want me to tell an investor. And I think, and I totally get why that sounds like crazy talk, but I also can tell you that it works and it's a leap of faith to try it, but I want you to try it. And so that's also why the Founders Network can kind of be easier in quotes, because if you meet with people you know or have comfort with, then it you can sort of do what we're doing in a safer space, mm-hmm. so to speak. And as you said, it gets easier, but it always has a touch of like hard things mm-hmm. to it, right? These are hard things.
And Stacey, I would say you need to practice it because you may be emotional. On the first time when I did it with Renee on our podcast, I started like I wouldn't say crying, but getting emotional. And at one point I couldn't, not that I couldn't get through it, but you could see that it was, wow, okay, 2007. That's when it dawned on me. I'm like, wow, did I not want to be at the restaurant because I didn't like the restaurant or because my dad wasn't there? So I'm thinking about that on the spot. So I'm like, wow, because I never really reflected upon it. Remember, I'm probably yes. very similar to you, staying busy, not to be able to think of certain
that's
things
right.
and confront certain things. That's important. And I would challenge anyone listening to this, Google the word oxytocin. And then see what happens when you tell stories and the oxytocin yeah. levels that go up. You share that connection with others. You know, Oren Claff says it best. We have a croc brain and then a neocortex. We're trying to elicit that croc brain, that emotional side to get in. So then the neocortex will say, okay, what's the cap rate? What's the IRR?
That's right.
If we can't connect on the front end with somebody and let them know that we're human, we're fallible, we're transparent, we're likable. If they don't get that part and they have their guard up, then you're never going to get yes. to that neocortex part. That's the part that we're talking about. That's why we're trying to convince you that story is the way to do that and that Stacey can help you to get in there. Yes.
That's right. That's right. And it's true. The heart buys first. Mm-hmm. The heart buys first. And again, and when you're talking investments and cap rates and IRRs and numbers, you know, this is a highly intellectual business. It's a highly intellectual sale. And what we tell ourselves is that means I sell to the brain. Someone is going to, rationalize this decision. And it's just, that's part of it, but that's the second part.
Mm-hmm.
Because human decision-making starts at the heart and mm-hmm. we skip it. Mm-hmm. So to your point, you spend all this time, like, look at this chart and here's this stat and da, da, da. And like, person's like, sounds cool, but like, I'm not bought in.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? And so I think multifamily too is interesting because I wonder how many backstories tie to like the specific area, geography, type of property. Like I feel like there could be so many cool threads and stories that people probably have of why they gravitate to a neighborhood, a town, a city, a type of property. Like there's a lot there.
Yeah, I can give you some specifics. We have students who are vets. They're veterans. They want to provide veteran housing. We have people that are living in Section 8 housing. They want to be able to provide that.
Yes.
There are people who have disabled children who want to provide homes for disabled. So there's definitely tons. And there may be ones that say, hey, I grew up in an apartment and I want to be able to provide a safe quality home for others as well. So I think there's so many different. And I think if you stop and explore, well, why did I get into this business? And you may be raising capital and saying, hey, I'm raising capital. I'm a vet. We have a lot of students in the community that are veterans and they're raising from people who are in the military. Well, why are they doing that? They're doing that not only because they resonate with them, but because they know that those people don't have the opportunity to invest in multifamily themselves. So they're giving them the opportunity and saying, you know, I want you to opt out of the stock market. I don't want you to put your money in these risky investments. I have this vehicle here that is, you know, to me is an amazing vehicle. You won't have access to that, you know, unless you're able to invest with me and you speak their language, you know, their fears, you know, their frustrations. Yeah. And if you can bridge that gap and pull your origin story out of that to be able to connect with them, you'll be able to raise a lot more money.
I love that. I have another exercise I think would be helpful. It's directly related to what you said. Okay, so there's another thing that happens with story that we want to be wary of, which is we make ourselves the hero of the story.
Yes.
Now,
yeah, I love that.
Everything we just talked about was backstory. So the only person who can be the hero of your backstory is you. So, so just like that's the one story that you're the hero of. However, all the other stories you're going to tell, you're not the hero, you're the guide.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try to make yourself the hero, you're competing with your prospect.
Mm-hmm.
So it would play out like this, what you just described with the veterans. So basically, I'm going to use the movies because it's a little bit more accessible. So I love The Hunger Games. If you've seen that movie, so you have Katniss and you have Haymitch as her guide, right? Mm-hmm. So Katniss is the hero. She has to go and you know, fight the tributes. And Haymitch is her guide. The thing with the movies is that you don't get to pick your guide. She just was handed Haymitch. She probably wouldn't have chosen him. Same thing, like Luke Skywalker and Yoda. Like, you don't get to pick the guide. The guide is just there. In the real world, you get to pick the guide. And oh, by the way, there's thousands of other guides.
Mm-hmm.
So when you tell your stories, the prospect is the hero and you're going to take them on a journey. That's the story together, right? You start somewhere. You're going to get to where you want to go together. They're the hero. You're the guide. When you tell the backstory, it helps that hero choose you. Why are you the one to take me, the hero, from where I am to where I want to go? And that's how the backstory plays into it. Mm-hmm. So this whole hero guide thing is tough for people because sometimes when you pitch, you think like, I got to pitch myself. Mm-hmm. You said it earlier. You have to understand your prospect is the hero. Where are they trying to go? And that's the stories. Those are the stories you want to focus on.
And it's very similar to what we're doing here on a podcast. This is the Jake and Gino show, but I am not the hero of the show right now. Stacy's the hero and I'm the guide trying to guide along a narrative and trying to teach people from Stacy's experience and Stacy's wisdom. And if I keep interrupting her and if I keep one-upping her and I keep telling her, no, you're wrong on the story, obviously we can have disagreements and that's what you want and you want to have challenges. But at the same time, if I'm the one, most people are probably going to shut that off and say, this guy's a pompous jerk. He doesn't know what he's talking about because he's, you know what I'm saying? Like, I feel it. That's how a lot of people come off. It's my show.
Yeah.
No, not my show. It's the listener's show. It's an obligation.
That's what I was going to say.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what I was going to say. And we talked about that before we went on the air. We were saying, okay, well, what will your audience, what will help them?
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways, they're the hero. We're the guides.
We're the guides.
You kind of have we have a guest guide today, which is Stacy, and here's the journey she's going to take you on.
Yeah.
So it changes things when you think about the story with a different lens.
Yes. It's a challenging thing. Before we go to the short break,
yeah.
I would say to people, working on yourself, I'm glad Jake's on the show because we could talk emotions without him on the show. Great. But it really comes down to, I don't want to say self-love, but really
yeah.
Being comfortable with yourself yes. and shedding the ego and shedding pride, two things that, you know, like God does not want us to have. And I think if we are prideful and we have a lot of ego, we always have to show up. And at some point, you know, in raising capital, you have to show your ethos and your credibility. Yeah. You have to show that. But there are certain ways to do that. But if you pull back and you just let others speak and you give them that space and you're sure of yourself, I think it all comes out.
I agree with you.
Let's take a quick time out to hear from our sponsors.
Now, we have had a great run in multifamily, going from 0 units to over $250 million in assets. That's over 2,000 apartment deals that we've been able to purchase through our framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right.
Now, Jake and I, we created the Jake and Gino community back in 2015. We launched our first book, Wield Our Profits. And since then, our students have closed over 60,000 units. That's over $4 billion in assets they've been able to close over the last 6 years.
And that's why this community has been so successful. We call it results-based education, and we pour back into the community everything that we've learned on our journey from 0 to 2,000 units and all our systems and scale that we use on our very own property management and investing companies.
Jake, I love that. It's not just education, it's implementation. So what I want you to do, click on that link down below, apply to work with our team, see how we can help you on your journey. Multifamily.
And we're back. You know, for me, we've talked about story. And like I said, Jake, you missed a little bit of emotion. Every podcast that I talk about emotion, you're either absent or you mute yourself and you never let it go. But that's okay. I'm going to get you one time. Because like I said, I did that origin story and he was sitting there listening to it as I was doing my story. And he's like, wow, that was really powerful. I'm like, brother, when is it your turn? And he just muted me. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But I think brand's important. Let's touch on brand.
Yeah, let's touch on brand.
Of creating a brand. And you know what, because people confuse brand with selling and brand with marketing. And I think I'm on this journey as well. What is the Jake and Gino brand? I know we're the premier multifamily education out there, but I think I'm more than that. My brand is about family. It's about experience. It's about accountability. It's about helping others. And I struggle with that as well. So I'd love to hear your definition of brand and how.
Yeah, of course. And brand is one of those, it's like so esoteric that you're like, WTF when someone says brand. Like, I don't know, what is that? My logo, my color palette, my font, like people, it's just kind of hard to get your, so I get it. Okay, so one way to think about brand is what people say about you when you're not in the room.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I like that.
Let's just sit and think about that. What people say about you when you're not in the room. So if a listener of yours was talking to someone else, they might say, oh, well, you should listen to the Jake and Gino show because it's the premier multifamily, blah, blah, whatever you said there. That was really good. But they're probably, maybe they say that, but they're probably going to say something else. And what's that they would say? Would they say, it's real talk, they're funny, I like, they bring in family into the conversation, like they're so approachable. Like they're probably going to say something else about how you make them feel or the vibe or, so that's brand too. And probably the part of brand that people miss. Mm-hmm. So brand is much more than your logo and your font, and that's an expression of your brand. But your brand is really kind of a core values type of exercise. And the way we guide people through it is we say, okay, what is the thing you want to be known for? What is the thing you want to be known for? And so you and Jake might say, well, we want to be known as like the premier multifamily educational platform. Great. Then when you talk and show up to the world, that's what you're going to talk about and do. And that is what you talk about and do. So that's like at the center. That's the core of your sort of pillars, right?
Yes.
And then around that, you may say, well, there's nuances to that. Like, we really believe in founder-led or family-owned real estate businesses or something like that, right? And mm-hmm. so that might be like a related but separate nuance that lots of people might do multifamily investing. But when you cross it with this other pillar, it starts to get very specific and niche. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's veterans. Like, we really want to help veterans. So whatever that other kind of subset is, that might also be a pillar. And you kind of keep going through, like, what are the things that make you different than other people who do what you do and that you're really passionate about? And then that could become a pillar that you talk about or a way that you show up. The challenge here is, as you do that, if you have the core and then you've got, like, let's say four satellites around you of topics or ways you want to show up to the world, a lot of times in the business world, we just keep it business.
Mm-hmm.
And you lose something if you do that. So we challenge people to say, one of those pillars should be something about you as people or as a person. So it could be hobbies. It could be something you're super passionate about. It could be family. It could be whatever. It could be something even not so heavy. Like, I like hip hop. My brain operates in lyrics. And a lot of times when I write, lyrics just show up in my writing. So, like, sometimes I reference that, and often there are lyrics in my LinkedIn posts. And that's just like who I am. I also like Dunkin' Donuts coffee, even though I know it's probably not the best coffee in the world. So, like, there are things about me that are just quirky and different. And I share those because other people have the same, you know, quirks and differences, and it unites us. Mm-hmm. So the brand is the picture of all of those things. Mm-hmm. It's what makes you different. And it's what makes you. And those are really tough to get to. Because I know we have notebooks, the exercise I would do to start unpack this, I think I have one, an exercise on the StacyHavener.com website on the pillars. But a way to kind of prep your brain before you do that exercise, you know, do the old like pro and con, like divide the paper in half. On one side, I want you to list, what are the typical things that people who do what you do do? Like, here's what's typically done. And then on the other side, I want you to list what you do that they don't, or why you don't do those things. Sometimes the way to get to what makes you unique is to ask yourself, what don't I do? What don't I believe that my peers do? It's somehow easier than trying to get to the affirmatives to start with the negatives. Like, I, you know, people in our business think performance is the most important thing. I don't. I think people are more important than performance. People in our business think the biggest firms are the best. I don't. I think that the niche specialists have a place in a portfolio. Right. Like, so it's like that counterpoint of like, I disagree. I don't do that. I don't think it should be done that way. That sometimes unlocks the true differentiators.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I'm working on it. When I did mine, I had multifamily in the middle, but I had a couple that were not. I had dad there, obviously family.
Yes.
I had faith as one of them. I had entrepreneur as one of them, because I think multifamily is an entrepreneurial venture. You become a multifamily entrepreneur because you're building a business based on buy right, finance right and manage right. You can buy and finance. Those are sexy. That's what everyone teaches out there, but nobody teaches you how to manage the asset. I think that's the differentiator for what we have.
Right there. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately I only wrote down four, but the other one would be community builder. Basically building a community of like-minded investors that we don't even raise capital from our students because we don't raise money. And that's a differentiator where almost every other educational platform out there is like, we'll teach you. Oh, but by the way, we've got some deal here. Would you like to invest in our deal? And we don't do that. Yeah.
That is fabulous. So just look, I mean, that was like 30 seconds. You mm-hmm. just really quickly got to things that make you different than your peers by mm-hmm. saying, what don't we do?
Mm-hmm.
Or what don't we believe? That should be on your website. Like if you're coming here because you want to get into deals, we don't do deals.
Mm-hmm.
We help you do deals.
Yes. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yes.
And that is like, it's the other thing that's great when you get really clear on this stuff is that if you do it well, your story, your brand, all the things that you're doing, it should do two things. It should attract like-minded people to you.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to do that, it needs to repel the ones who are not a fit. And mm-hmm. that is terrifying for many people, especially when you're raising money. You're like, so you're telling me now, first show me I gotta tell stories. And I'm like, eh. And now you're telling me I have to actually repel people, like mm-hmm. drive people away. Yes, I am. That's because if your messaging is too vanilla, where you're trying to be something for everyone, you won't mean anything to anybody at all.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. I agree with you. You're Stacey's doing you a favor. She's getting rid of people that don't resonate with you because at first sight, when a deal is going bad, those are the people that are going to be on the phone with you saying, what's going on? Whereas the people who like you, trust you, enjoy your story, embrace your journey, they're not the ones who are going to call up and say, what's going on? Oh, you've hit a rough patch. It happens to everybody.
What
are we going to do? And that's so important. That's so crucial to be able to pick your tribe and make sure that your message resonates with your tribe.
Yeah. And it's kind of the same thing. You've got to be okay with the inverse. Like I spend so much time talking about like the bigs. They're not for me. And I don't want them to call me. They probably would never call me. We are diametrically opposed on so many things. I'm not interested in helping BlackRock get any bigger. They don't need my help. They don't want my help. And I don't want them. I don't care. I think they're too big. So I am brave enough to say that. They're fine. And if somebody uses them, that's great. But they're not the only game in town.
Mm-hmm.
And I am okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
BlackRock could write a really big check to Havener Capital Partners to do work for them. And I don't want it.
Well, Stacey, what's going to happen is you're going to get the check. You're going to be elated for 30 minutes to go, man, this is freaking awesome. And then at some point, your core values, your values-based decision-making, you're going to be like, I don't know if this is right. And then a year from now, you're going to be like, why did I do that? It's short-term gain for long-term pain. And that can go for buying a deal that doesn't fit your core values or buy right criteria. It can go for a business relationship. It can go for a relationship. If it doesn't fit your values or your belief system, and you do it and you compromise it, you may have to, you may say to yourself, I need to do this. But in the long run, you may have some sort of success. But at the other end of the spectrum, if you're not living by your values and you're trying to hit your objectives and your goals and they don't line up with them, it's not going to feel comfortable in the long term if you're honest with yourself. Now, if you're the person who's going to push it down and work forward, yeah, but at some point, you're going to be saying to yourself, why did I do that?
Why did I do that? Mm-hmm. It's such great advice. And you kick yourself after because you're like, I knew it. You kind of know it.
Yes.
And, you know, and the other thing that happens, by the way, I think you alluded to this, is that if you were to take, and we all do it, right? So like you take a deal, you kind of know you shouldn't, it's not exactly right, a partner, whatever, a client. And then the process doesn't work. And they're like, why isn't this working? And it's like, well, because you're not listening to me as the guide. You're not letting me do it because, and then you start going, why did I can't even help them
mm-hmm.
because they don't believe what I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is tough. The whole journey of authenticity and kind of authentic capital raising or authentic leadership, authentic entrepreneurship. That's basically what we're talking about here. And it does require, you know, hard work.
Mm-hmm. That's why it's difficult for people that are younger. They don't have the stories. They don't have the wisdom. It's difficult when you're in your 20s and your 30s. Don't be down on yourself and saying, I haven't gotten anywhere. It takes years sometimes. It takes experience. It takes vulnerability. It takes making a ton of mistakes. It takes losing a ton of money, unfortunately.
Yes.
You'll make the money back, but you need that as part of your journey. So it's okay if you don't haven't arrived where you think you should be. It just takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And, you know, and it's also okay to share what has impacted you so far.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be maybe a story like Gino shared about his dad, right? It's not going to be whatever. But like my story starts young, right? Like having to pay my way through school and having to figure out how to do that. So we all have stories and we can start where we are, knowing to your point that like there are no failures, right? There are only lessons.
Yeah.
And if you encounter a failure, you can just say to yourself, okay, this hurts a lot. And I'm going to come back to this when I'm ready and unpack what I've learned from this mistake, in quotes, so that I don't make that one again. I'll make other ones, but I'm not going to make that one again.
As we wrap up the show, where can the listeners, first of all, I'd love to hear a book recommendation because I know you love literature.
Oh, yeah.
You love reading.
Give us
a book reco, and then where can the listeners get more information about it?
All right, I'm going to give one that's a little different, and it's called The Courage to Be Disliked. And it's a parable. So it's kind of told from a mentor student sort of. It's a little esoteric at the beginning. Just try to get through that part because the lessons and the journey that these two go on together, it's really powerful, really powerful. Courage to be disliked. And for people who want to follow me, my platform of choice for social is for sure LinkedIn. So you can connect with me there. And if you go to stacyhavener.com, I have a lot of resources for entrepreneurs. So even if you're not in the investment world, kind of with the funds, we've got personal branding things, we've got the pillars. So stacyhavener.com will have a lot of resources for you. You can sign up for my newsletter over there.
A young Stacy Havener goes to college. Her dream is of becoming a college professor. And thank God that dream didn't come true, to be completely honest with you. Thank God. But you know what? She struggled. She went through it. She paid her way through college. She met a coach. One of her coaches on his day gig was raising capital. And she started working with him. And I don't think he's looked back. Raised $500 million in 2 years. Went on to her next gig. Started working at that. And since then, you know, a woman in a male-dominated arena, bucking the trend. Storytelling, being vulnerable, being authentic, all of the stuff that we're told we're not supposed to be is obviously working for her. And I think if you want to increase and grow your brand, learn how to raise capital, I don't even want to say ethically, but fun and connecting with people. It's not just getting a check, but once you get that check, you want to connect with that person on a different kind of level and you want to serve that person and you want to be a financial steward to that person. And how do you do that? By letting that person know who you truly are, what your values are, and how you're going to be able to deliver with them. And how do you do that? Yes. By building your brand and by working on your story. Stacy, thank you for being on the show today. I appreciate it.
Gosh, what a pleasure, Gino. Thank you so much.
Thank you.